I'm Greg Johnson.
I'm Frody.
Welcome to Countercurrents Radio. We are back doing one of our normal podcasts after a couple of weeks of traveling and drama, basically. Travel and excitement. And we'll be talking all about that at the recent Scanza Forum in Copenhagen. Before we go into that, though, I need to update our fundraiser. We haven't done an update in about 3 weeks now, so it's going to take a little bit longer than normal. We are now at $82,632.40. We are trying to raise $100,000 this year, and we are at $82,632.40. We've received a total of 309 donations so far, and I want to give thanks to some of these donors. So we received various large donations: $4,980.70, $8,320.09, $6,149.63. I want to thank whoever donated those very large sums of money. We received $200.12 from one of my friends in Idaho, $12.30, $7.73, and $209.23. I believe those all come from Alex, and thank you very much, Alex, for that. Finally, I received a donation in rubles that works out to $65.72. So thank you, Mr. Putin, for the rubles. We've also received the following credit card donations: $10 from DC, $5 from SM, $50 from LH, $20 from RC, $100 from JV, $100 from SK, $20 a month from JM, $50 from JG, $500 from OD, $14 and something from JH, $100 from RB, $500 from Tito, thank you very much, most generous, $50 from RS, $20 from MM, $30 from JK, $5 from RV, $100 from PL, $500 a month from TM, that's really amazing, $61.21 from NB, $50 from RF, $10 a month from OP, $1,000 from TA, very, very generous, thank you so much, $20 from MB, $20 from RW, $200 from CK, $22 a month from J, $100 a month from MW, and $20 from AB. And again, the total is now $82,632.40. Unfortunately, we have been deplatformed by two payment processors within the last week. And so if you want to donate to our fundraiser, you can't do it with a credit card. The only way you can donate is through cryptocurrency, or if you want to send a check or a money order to our P.O. box in San Francisco, you can do it that way as well. We are 17,000 and change away from our goal, which is a very, very doable amount of money. We were hoping to wrap this up by the end of October, but given that we are unable to accept credit card payments currently and we're searching for a solution, we're just going to extend this fundraiser as long as it takes to make our $100,000 goal. If you want to make a donation by mail, please get in touch with me, and that will give me a little bit of a sense of what's on the way, and that'll help us with our planning for wrapping up this fundraiser. So I want to thank everybody who's helped out so far. I'm just hoping you'll be able to use a credit card, which is the most convenient form of donating in the near future. We're working on that. If you can't, please do try cryptocurrency or try and just send something by the old-fashioned mail. So thank you again.
That's very impressive. Obviously, it's very impressive with people who give very large sums of money. And it's also, it's predictable that more and more deplatforming is going to happen. Someone is out there and is worried about the progress that nationalism is making and nationalists are making. So it's predictable, and no one said it was going to be convenient, but we will just keep on doing what we do. They have different ways of trying to attack us and silence us. But that's not going to work, because we're just going to see that as stumbling blocks and climb over them and continue going forward.
So let's talk about the Skanza Forum this past weekend in Copenhagen. It was besieged by leftists. It was besieged by Antifa. They were actually flying the Soviet flag. And it prevented me, for one, from speaking there. And it prevented a number of people from actually getting into the venue. And I would just like to hear the whole story. And I'll chime in with my side of the story, too. But, Frody, why don't you just tell us the story of Skanza Copenhagen 2019?
Right. First of all, what was different from the beginning about this Skanza Forum compared to other Skanza Forums is that usually we have a focus on intellectuals. We have a focus on the intellectual debate and so on. We don't talk too much about current day politics, day-to-day politics, and sort of the general stuff that is in the mainstream media. So we usually invite intellectuals. The Antifa aren't intellectuals, so they don't know who our intellectuals are. So it's kind of difficult for them to sort of whip up a frenzy against those people. What we had this time was Rasmus Paludan on the list of speakers. And apart from the other speakers, or as opposed to the other speakers, he is very well known in the mainstream media. He runs a political party. He is a sort of debater. In Denmark, everyone knows who he is. And the Antifa hates him. He basically has a price on his head from Islamist terrorists. So he has constant security bodyguards protecting his life. And that is why it got this extra attention to begin with.
The night before the event, we had dinner, and Paludan offered to drop me and a couple of other people back at the hotels. And so we got in his car, and he was followed by a van full of security people. And one of the people in the car said, "So does the Queen of Denmark have this much security?" And he said, "Not really. Nobody's mad at her."
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was kind of wild having a security detail following us after the meal.
I think that's an important thing to emphasize, because English speakers, the listeners of this podcast, probably don't know how well known he is in Denmark and how hated he is by the Islamists. Because what he does is that he is a showman. He goes to immigrant neighborhoods in Copenhagen. He has very frank discussions, to say the least, about Islam and about Muslim immigration. And he films the reaction he gets when basically these immigrants try to attack him. And like I said, we usually engage in sort of intellectual, philosophical, ideological debates. But in reality, seeing is believing. So doing those kinds of stunts, it works. Because he gets a lot of attention to the issues that way. But that's really why the Antifa was whipped up in a fury wanting to harm us, because he was speaking. He was supposed to speak, rather. So on the and I should say also that the theme of the event was national populism. National populism, it refers to the trend in current politics of peoples of Europe and America to react against the sort of elite plan of globalism. So it involves Donald Trump, it involves Brexit, and it involves Le Pen in France, who has 20 million votes, the AfD in Germany, and so on. And Rasmus Paludan is an example of national populism in Denmark. That's why we invited him. And we were going to have a meeting, or we did have a meeting in Copenhagen on October 12th. And right before the meeting started, there was a big group of Antifa gathering on the street in front of the venue, blocking the street, acting sort of aggressively as they always do. Basically, they prevented our guests from entering the venue. And The interesting thing here is that they had announced they were going to do this 2 weeks ahead. So 2 weeks before the event, they had already announced publicly that they were going to try to stop our meeting. And their usual modus operandi is that they attack people violently. They are terrorists by the definition of the term terrorism. Terrorism is the use of violence and the threat of violence for political purposes to intimidate people, prevent them from speaking their minds in the political debate. And that is what they do. So I don't go along with the narrative of naming them protesters, because protesters have a legitimate place in our society. You can protest and you can hold signs and scream and do whatever you like, you know, in protest against something and voice your opinion against something. What you're not allowed to do is to physically prevent others from using their freedom of speech, and you're not allowed to physically attack other people because you disagree with their policies or their political opinions. But that is what the Antifa does. So they are terrorists. But still, we did hold our event. The event did happen. The majority of the guests did get into the venue. The majority of the speeches were given. We had a great Q&A, and we did have our conference. We did make a stand that day for our freedom of speech, and we had a great event. A lot of people came up to me afterwards and said that this was the most memorable and most important event they had ever participated in. And I'm very happy about that. And not a single person complained. That was an inspiration for me, because as an organizer, you're always concerned about the people who are coming to your event and concerned about people who travel from far away to go to your event and they're prevented from getting into the venue. But not a single person of them complained about it to me. Everyone was supportive. I'm very grateful for the financial support, the moral support, and just the encouragement I got before the event, during the event, and after the event.
So do you have any speculation as to how they got the location of the event?
Well, we do have a few theories and hypotheses we're working on. Of course, it's very difficult to verify because we're not mind readers, but we can look at specific things that happened and conclude some other things from that. So we do have different theories. The thing is that when you have two options, basically, you can either have a super secure event with invitations only, and you know personally everyone who wants to come in, and you give them very strict instructions about how to operate, or you want to give the opportunity to new people to participate as well. And that, of course, opens up to a risk of subversion. And the only thing you can do is to reduce that risk, because eliminating it would mean that it would be basically impossible for new people to get in as well. So that is how we operate. But we do have a few theories of how this happened. And of course, we're going to take that into consideration going forward. So I don't think that anyone needs to worry about future events, because this was a very special event. And the reason why these Antifa people got interested in it was because a person very well known in the mainstream was going to speak there. Mm-hmm. And that is what whipped up their sort of enthusiasm about it. Mm-hmm. Because he is such a well-known person.
Right. Okay, so I arrived, I think, about 20 minutes before the event was to begin. And I had heard from you that there was the Antifa were aware of the location and to be careful. So I told my cab driver, why don't you pull up a couple doors away from the venue or the address that I had given him. And then we arrived there and there was a big crowd and there were also police cars and so forth. So I said, why don't you just drop me off on the next block? So I got out and I tried to figure out how to get in. And I thought, well, I could enter from the street that we had just come down, or I could try going around to the back, basically, and entering from the next street over. And as I was preparing to do that, this young woman walked up and greeted me by name, and I recognized her as a Facebook friend. And another fellow came over then, and another woman, Laura Towler, came up. And there were a couple of young guys who came by, and they sort of walked off. And so the four of us stood there for a while, and it was pretty clear that, first of all, there was no way of getting in through the crowd. And second, it looked like we were being watched by a couple of people in black hoodies just right across the street from us. And one of the people who was with us, this guy, said that they were taking pictures. So we moved out of there fairly quickly, and we went to a cafe. And, you know, the event hadn't started yet, so we went to a cafe, sat down, ordered coffee, ordered tea, and asked for further instructions, right? The event started, and we kept waiting. A couple other people who were going into, who wanted to get in, but couldn't, joined us. They saw us in the cafe and joined us. And so we were there for about an hour. And then we thought that we should, try and get in. We heard that there was another location that we could enter. So the four of us who originally gathered decided to try to get to that other location. And we took a somewhat circuitous route to approach it. And when we got there, it was very clear that it was being besieged too. There was, 20 or 30 of these people there. And there were police as well. We sent this fellow on ahead as a scout. And then at that point, we bumped into another one of our friends on the corner. So we decided to go off, and we ended up having lunch, basically. Mm-hmm. And it started raining. It started raining actually quite a lot at some point. And we were hoping they would finally leave. So the five of us went back and tried to get in. The Danish speaker who was with us spoke to the police on both sides of the building, and they were not going to help us, even though we had been told that we could get police escort in.
That was what the police told us. When I went out and talked to the person in charge of that operation, I said, one of our speakers is trying to get in. You have to let him through, and you have to help him get in. And they said, yeah, of course, we're going to do that. But they didn't.
Yeah, they didn't. So at that point, we got a message to wait in front of a store near there, and that somebody would come out and get us. Somebody would come out and meet us and escort us in. By this time, it was after 3 in the afternoon, and we waited in front of the store for 15 or 20 minutes, and then we started noticing again that these Antifa types were skulking around and looking at us, stalking us. They started acting very, very suspicious when three policemen on motorcycles came down the street, and we thought, okay, time to get out of here. I said, I'm just going to call this a wash. So we moved away, and we found a bar, and we ducked into the bar. There were just people having lunch. We asked the bartender or the waiter, the maitre d', whoever it was, to call us a cab. A cab showed up very soon after that, and we just went back to our various hotels.
Right.
And we were all kind of tired. I mean, we'd been sort of standing around and waiting around for hours at that point. Laura said that the only regret she had was that she was wearing heels with all this walking over cobblestones and standing. But we all felt a little tired, so I just decided I was going to get a shower and relax, basically, and prepare for dinner later on. So yeah, that's what happened, and it was rather disappointing. Obviously, I wanted to get in there. I wanted to be with everybody. I wanted to give a speech.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to get knocked over the head with a bottle or a brick or maced or stabbed or shot or whatever was possible by trying to wade into a crowd. Even if I were just attacked physically, it would all be on camera, and it would be there for the rest of my life floating around. And it's just demoralizing to see our people get attacked that way. And, you know, if you fight back, you're going to be treated as the aggressor.
Yeah.
We know how this works. We know what happened to Alex Fields, and we know what happened to other people at Charlottesville. So there was really no sense in just trying to barge my way in through a crowd of Antifa, that the cops were not corralling and policing. The police weren't policing the situation.
No.
And it was very unfortunate. So I did, however, and this is kind of a funny thing, there were a couple of people in particular that I planned to meet that weekend. And two of those people just happened to be people I bumped into. And so we ended up spending the whole afternoon together. You know, we talked a lot and got to know each other. So that was actually very productive. There were productive conversations that went on amongst people who didn't get in. There was some networking, some socializing, some camaraderie. So yeah, it wasn't a total loss by any means, but it was certainly not the way I wanted to spend that Saturday afternoon. I wanted to be in there with the rest of us. I wanted to be signing books.
Yeah.
I wanted to give my talk, and I wanted to hear the other talks. Fortunately, the talks that were given were filmed, and the quality of video and audio is really quite good, and those are going up on YouTube now, so I can at least, you know, enjoy those from a distance.
I mean, that is the story that I heard from other people as well. It seems like those who couldn't get in, and I have to emphasize that the majority of attendees did get in. So, but it's still quite a few who didn't get in. And what I heard from them was that they did meet each other outside. So they did spend the day getting to know new friends, networking, and they saw the reality of the situation. So I definitely got the impression that no one felt that this day was wasted in any way. And that's very encouraging for me as the organizer. But there is also the other thing that you mentioned, and that is that the police weren't policing. And when I went out to talk to the person in charge of this police operation, the policeman in charge, I said, you have to move these people down the street so they can protest over there. And he said, well, they also have a freedom of speech, which made me react because I said, well, they're not speaking. They are not voicing an opinion. They are blocking the street. We're not objecting to anything they say, but they are physically attacking people trying to get to the venue, and they're blocking the street from traffic. Both for vehicles and for pedestrians, of course. And he said, well, if they attack someone, you have to be able to point out exactly who did what to who. But I don't buy that because, of course, if an aggressive mob of 100 people is attacking people trying to pass them, that is an aggressive mob, and the police has the authority and the ability to scatter them.
Yes,
to disperse an aggressive mob.
At least in some legal systems, and I would imagine a country like Denmark has such laws, if you are part of an aggressive mob, any member of that mob can be held responsible for anything done by members of that mob.
Yes.
There is a collective responsibility that you undertake when you join yourself to a mob like that. So the idea that this guy was floating is spurious, probably, in Danish law. We should ask Rasmus Paludan, who's a lawyer, if that's true. But that sounds like a very suspicious and spurious thing.
Yeah.
In the United States, if you are part of a criminal conspiracy, you can be charged for every crime committed by members of that conspiracy.
Yes.
Even if you didn't actually participate in them, pull the trigger, whatever,
yes.
you were held responsible for that. So I'm just not buying that. I think that's rubbish.
I think that's rubbish. And the even more interesting thing is that this mob attacked an outsider, that is the person driving the delivery truck who was delivering food from a catering firm, from a restaurant. He was attacked. They attacked the car. They stole the food. So who is responsible for those economical losses, those financial losses, and who is responsible for these physical attacks that the police allowed to go on throughout the day? And what is more, like I said in the beginning, they announced 2 weeks beforehand that they were going to attack us. that they were going to stop our meeting using quote-unquote creative methods. Now, what those creative methods are, what they consist in, can be gleaned from looking at the history of the Antifa and from looking at what they actually did, because they have a decades-long history of using arson, of using car bombs, of using assault, physical assault and rioting, basically almost killing people in the process.
Yeah, creative methods is just a euphemism for violence.
Yeah.
And police would never hesitate to draw that conclusion if I were to say something to that effect. We're going to give all of our enemies special treatment.
Yeah.
If I were to say that, they would immediately conclude, and they'd be right to do that because they're duty bound to assume the worst. They would immediately conclude that that's a euphemism for violence.
Of course.
In fact, the standard Holocaust narrative claims that special treatment, Sonderbehandlung, was a euphemism for genocide.
Yeah.
It might have just been special treatment for all we know, but they make that claim that it's a euphemism for genocide. The point is that even if it isn't, or even if it isn't a euphemism at all, or people aren't using euphemisms, the police are duty bound to at least consider the worst case scenario. That's their job.
Yes.
That's their job.
And when they explicitly say that they're going to stop us from having our meeting, they're not going to protest and voice an opposing opinion or anything like that. They're going to stop us from having our meeting.
Using creative methods.
Yeah.
And whatever methods it is, if they're going to stop us, they're violating people's rights.
Exactly.
They're declaring in advance that they're going to use something illegal for an illegal purpose.
Yeah, and we did not have a public demonstration or anything like that. We were having a private meeting in a venue where they were not welcome.
Yeah.
So if they try to stop us from doing that, they're not protesting. They're violating our rights.
Right.
And the police, of course, has to take into consideration that they always use violence. They've always used violence. The Antifa isn't a group that is participating in the political debate or using freedom of speech. They do the opposite. They try to silence people and to violate their rights for freedom of speech.
Right.
So I mean, that's very clear cut. We made it clear to the police that this was going on. We alerted to the police of this fact. And they also announced 2 weeks beforehand where they were going to meet, Folkets Park in Copenhagen. They were going to meet there in preparation of this crime, where they were going to go from this place to the place where they were going to attack us. So the police knew where they were going to meet in conspiracy of a crime.
Yeah.
And still they didn't prevent them. And during the entirety of the day when the crime was ongoing, these people were allowed to continuously commit a crime against our guests during throughout hours of the entire day. They were allowed to block people who had traveled far. People traveled from Canada, from the United States. People traveled from far away to go to this meeting in Copenhagen. And who's going to cover their financial losses? I mean, the police has a responsibility to ensure that people can move freely on the streets.
Right, right. And frankly, the police were wasting huge amounts of taxpayer money by standing around with their hands in their pockets for yeah. hours, allowing this to happen, when they could have simply corralled these people away from the venue, or broken the whole thing up, or not allow it to happen to begin with, in which case they wouldn't have had to be there at the taxpayer dime for hours standing in the rain, doing nothing, basically bearing witness to and enabling a crime.
They were enabling the crime by not letting you through. Yeah. No one told them to not let you in.
Yeah.
So they were helping the Antifa in stopping people from getting into to the conference. And that's outrageous. That's completely outrageous.
Right. You know, another thing that was fascinating to me is the fact that they were flying the flag of the Soviet Union.
Yeah.
They were carrying that flag. You know, if somebody were carrying a Nazi banner, there would be absolutely no question in the minds of the police that these guys are dangerous and maybe should be treated that way. But the flag that flew over the gulag That's just a group of people peacefully demonstrating, except when they're not being peaceful, demonstrating their different views. They're engaged in freedom of speech.
Yeah.
There are rubber standards here. These people are given kid glove treatment. They're enabled by the establishment. And it's really rather unfortunate. It doesn't pass the laugh test. And I hope the people of Denmark get the message about this. I hope that the press in Denmark talks about this. I hope that they talk about it in such a way that people can conclude that some kind of miscarriage of justice had taken place, and maybe there'll be some pressure not to allow things like this to happen in the future. What has been the press coverage of last weekend's conference and the terrorism, the communist violence that plagued that conference?
Well, I've seen no coverage in the mainstream press about the violence committed by these Antifa against our guests. It was basically, in the beginning, chaos about these protests and the clashes between the Antifa and the police outside, but nothing, not a single word about the violence committed by the Antifa mm-hmm. against people trying to get to our conference. Not a single word. Mm-hmm. What I did see was about Rasmus Paludan. They did write about him because he couldn't attend the meeting either, but that was for a different reason. You couldn't get in because of the Antifa mob. He wasn't allowed to go to the venue in the first place because, like I said in the beginning, he has a constant threat against his life, which is why he has bodyguards. Mm-hmm. But at this point, during this morning, they all of a sudden drastically raised the security level. So basically, he wasn't allowed to go there because the security service said that if he would have gone to this location, he would endanger his own life as well as lives of the people around him, near to him, close to him. And considering the fact that there is a constant, obviously, Islamist terror threat against him, that is how I interpret the situation. Of course, the security service doesn't go into details about who and what and how, but everyone has to draw their own conclusions. But it wasn't because of the Antifa he couldn't go there, but because there was a genuine threat to his life and the people near him.
Well, yeah, maybe that's true. Maybe that's on the up and up, or maybe that's just a pretext that they used to keep him from speaking. Could it be that they're just trying to sabotage the event?
I mean, who knows?
They raised his threat level.
Yeah.
Was there any concrete basis for raising the threat level other than the fact that there was going to be Antifa?
Well, I don't have that information.
Yeah.
Of course, they don't give out that information at all.
Yeah.
So it's impossible. We can only guess, what their motives for doing this.
I mean, they might very well have just decided we're going to prevent him from speaking,
right?
Under the guise of protecting him, and by saying, the threat level's up, we won't allow you to leave, we won't allow you to come to this event, which would speak to a larger effort on the part of the Danish state to suppress the event or sabotage the event. It's a certainly conceivable possibility, and I think we have to at least entertain such possibilities.
Yeah, we have to be open to suggestions.
Yeah.
But other than that, no press coverage. There was an article today in a weekly newspaper called Weekendavisen in Denmark. There was an article about the Antifa violence, but not about our event. It was just in general the Antifa violence against people in Denmark. Voicing opinions about mass immigration and so on. So, yeah, I mean, it does get some attention, but still, I saw pictures of the police head of the police union being a part of a demonstration with the hammer and sickle flags in the background and so on. And like we have alluded to earlier, if we just play with the idea, if we do this sort of philosophical thought experiment that what if the shoe were on the other foot and we were we announced that we are gonna physically stop in creative ways a meeting of a private meeting of left-wing intellectuals or liberal intellectuals, and we are a group, if we were a group that had a decades-long history of using arson and assault, violent assault and rioting, and we announced that we're going to stop them from having their legal private meeting, of course, the police wouldn't have reacted the same way they did this time. The police would have locked us up preventively, you know, to prevent this from happening and proactively. This is unacceptable. But the reason this happens is because our reactions aren't the same as the reactions of other people when they get treated this way.
Well, in what way?
Well, what I mean is that if a Jewish group, for example, was prevented from having a meeting because there was a violent mob outside the venue stopping people from getting in and spitting at people and punching people trying to get through, if you just have that image in your head, how would they react as a group?
Yeah, they'd raise holy hell. Basically.
They'd raise hell. There would be the people, policemen would be fired from their jobs. This would be endlessly in the media. They would have teams of lawyers going after people. They would throw people in jail for long periods of time. But we are expected to just shrug and sort of, just think that, that's just how it is. We just have to accept that that's how it is. But I mean, and my opinion is that we shouldn't accept it. We should take legal action against this. And we should hold people responsible and we should demand answers. Because if, as long as they are allowed to treat us like this, if we allow ourselves to be treated as second-class citizens, we can never expect any real influence in society.
Right.
If we allow ourselves to be treated much worse than other groups, then basically we don't assert our own legitimacy, and we have to do that.
Right. So what is going to happen? Are you contemplating legal action?
Yeah, I have reached out to those people I know who have legal experience, lawyers and so on in Denmark, and we are looking over what we can do. We are looking at what actions we can take. And also I want to raise awareness, because we need to raise awareness of these things.
Right.
I don't think people in general, because the mass media doesn't really portray this in a fair way. They will say that there was a right-wing extremist. If we have a peaceful meeting and the Antifa outside are fighting with the police and attacking people, the news media will say there was a right-wing extremist meeting, or so violence at a right-wing extremist meeting, or something like that, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Concerned citizens protested a right-wing extremist meeting.
Yeah.
Yeah, one of the concerned citizens that we saw as we were in the vicinity of the thing was one of these Antifa was leaving, and he was this giant figure. He must have been 6'4". He had a hammer and sickle tattooed on his forehead and a Kalashnikov tattooed on his cheek and a nose ring. I'm sure there aren't a whole lot of guys by that description in Copenhagen. And he looked like a deranged, violent freak.
Yeah.
So an intimidating group of people, to be sure.
And we can't expect our guests, people in different ages, people in different age groups, some of them young, some. I mean, if there's a 19-year-old guy or a 20-year-old guy, or for that matter, a 60-year-old guy. You can't expect them to go through a mob, an aggressive mob, punching them, pulling their clothes, spitting at them, shoving them.
Yeah.
There is one of our guests who is a university professor who is in his late 50s. He was punched by these people. I mean, it's you can't expect that of people to just go through that violent mob and you know, like the police expected them to do. And when they get up to the police barrier, the police won't let them through. They just get told by the police that they have to stand in the middle of this violent mob.
Right.
So no, this was completely unacceptable. This is just completely outrageous. And again, I want to say that we had a private meeting. We didn't have a public demonstration or engage in sort of political agitation of any kind. We wanted to have a private meeting, and these people showed up and attacked people.
Right.
And attacked outsiders as well, like I've said.
So you went on a live stream with me and Mark Collett and Laura Towler, who were all there, on the Patriotic Weekly Review show. And then shortly after that, you went on Red Ice and had a conversation about this with Henrik.
Yes.
And I thought both of those went really, really well. Mm-hmm. And then we find that Red Ice has been taken off YouTube.
Yeah.
Right in the aftermath of that. What are your thoughts about that?
I mean, Henrik has obviously been busy. His YouTube channel was shut down yesterday. I haven't heard any direct explanation from him, so I haven't communicated with him directly since then. So I don't have any verification of whether it was because of our chat, the mm-hmm. interview with me or not. But it was obviously just a few hours after the interview with me that their channel was shut down. So of course, I at least speculate that there is a connection.
Yeah, again, we don't know, but
no,
it behooves us, if we're doing due diligence, to at least consider that this happened because of the interview that you did. In which case, gosh, you're YouTube poison now, Frody.
Yeah, apparently.
It's very, very disturbing. I hope there is not a systematic attempt to come after Scanza with knives. Basically, it seems a little unlikely that there would be any like actual coordination between YouTube headquarters and what, you know, passes for the headquarters of Antifa in Denmark. But I wonder if this is getting sort of the international left up in arms or something about that. It's an interesting question.
They're definitely connected in the same goal, namely of silencing us.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, that goal connects them. And we know that you know, these Antifa people, at least in Sweden and you know, many other places, they are connected to people, you know, within the mainstream media, within the sort of top levels of society and so on. So I don't make any sort of assumptions of this all being just coincidences. These people want to silence us, and they want to destroy our societies, and that's why we are being attacked. I mean, like I told Henrik, that what we are doing is sort of, if you just contemplate the fact that they are replacing the entire population of Europe, mm-hmm. they are replacing our population, and they expect us to not have a conversation about it.
Yeah.
We're just talking about this issue that concerns millions and tens of millions of people, and that is our big crime.
Yeah.
We just voice a concern that involves tens of millions of people who are concerned about this, and show that through their votes and through their actions, and we're supposed to be silenced because we talk about these issues. We talk about our future, you know, the future generations of white people being minorities in their own countries and so on, and that makes us bad people somehow. It's just completely insane, but that's why they want to shut us down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. The national populism is basically all about Europeans rebelling against globalization and multiculturalism and diversity. They don't want this to happen.
Yeah.
They don't want there to be new Trumps or new Brexits, and they want to erase all the gains that have been made by national populists so far.
Yeah. Yeah, they want to silence us, and they're going to use every dirty method. And of course, that's also connected with why Countercurrents is being deplatformed from payment processors, and why the same thing happens to Red Eyes and other things. They want to use every dirty method to shut us down, because they know that in any open discussion or open debate with us, they will lose every time. Because we have the fact and the logic and the morals on our side.
Yeah, that's exactly right. They can't win a fair fight, so they're trying to rig everything in their favor. And they've been doing this for a very, very long time.
Yeah.
More than 100 years, the plague of communism has bedeviled our world, and these people are communists. They were waving the communist flag.
No.
Let's call them communists. One thing that always irritates me is these silly normicon types who think they can own the libs by calling Antifa fascists.
Yeah, that's
stupid. Oh, you horrible fascists. It's like, these people are communists. They're openly avowing that they're communists. And let's call them by what name they choose to be called by. There's no worse name in the book, frankly, than communist. They're very open, arrogant, and militant about flying that communist flag. And frankly, I think they take on guilt. They take responsibility for all the crimes of communism by marching under that flag.
And they want to use the same methods. They want to use violence against people who don't do as they say.
Yeah, exactly.
I just want to emphasize again that the meeting did go on. We did hold the conference. Most of the people got in. Most of the speeches were delivered. Everyone was super enthusiastic. And like I've also said on the streams aforementioned, that a lot of people came in to nationalist issues as intellectuals. They read about these things. They encountered it on the internet. It has an abstract reality for them in a way. And some of them have come into these issues over the last few years only. So I think it's a valuable experience for them to see the reality out there. That this is not just a polite discussion where we have differing opinions and where we give our arguments, the other side gives their arguments, and people will just evaluate those arguments and then we'll see where we go from there. No, they will use dirty methods to attack us and silence us, and they will attack old people, they will attack young people, they will attack women. It doesn't matter.
Right.
And that's the reality of, and I think that's a valuable experience for people to have. It's a good thing for people to see that is the reality we have to work in. So a lot of people actually said that this was the best event they've ever been to because of that, because of just the winds of reality being about them, you know.
Right. Let's go back to this question that was raised. What would be happening in Denmark now if a Jewish group had been picketed and protested and prevented from fully having its meeting as planned? People would be raising holy hell. The leaders of the Jewish community are very good at cultivating contacts with important people. They have legislators and police chiefs and the editors of newspapers in their Rolodexes. They have the influential people in their Rolodexes. I want to ask our listeners in Denmark, and I know there are many listeners and readers in Denmark, to take stock of the important people, the influential people that you know. Ask yourself, do you know somebody who edits a newspaper, runs a TV station, is in local government, in national government? Do you know somebody who knows such people? Take stock of the connections that you have and try and use them. Try and use the connections and the power that you have while you still have it, because the whole point of the establishment today is to disempower us entirely, to take away our power. Use the power that you have, use it or lose it, and protest this. Write a letter. Make a phone call, try and get people you know who might be in the media to write about this, to investigate this. raise holy hell about this, because it's not just our freedoms that have been abridged in this particular case. It's everybody's freedoms that are being abridged in this particular case, because any success these people have at shutting down Skanza is a pretext for them to try it again. They're going to be encouraged to do this with other people in the future. Right. So raise holy hell about this. If you are in Denmark and you know somebody, raise hell about it. Even if you don't know anybody who's influential, talk about this. Comment about it online. Post links to news coverage about this and so on and so forth. There's no reason why we can't start taking this very, very seriously and start, you know, being the squeaky wheel in this particular case. There's no reason why we can't do this. We have to stop being big about these things.
Yes.
We think, oh, let's just be big about this and go on with our lives. No, we can't be big about these things. We've lost control of our countries by being big about these things and by not making a scene when our rights are being taken away. So let's get angry and let's actually do something about this. If you are a lawyer in Denmark, get in touch with us. Give us some legal advice. Give Frode some legal advice about how he might fight this, how we might protest this. Because it's very, very important that we don't just go down without a fight. We need to learn lessons from this. We have learned lessons. But we also need to hit back. And I think that if there's anything that you, our Danish listeners, can do to help us hit back within the confines of the legal system, within the press that exists today and so forth, please reach out. Please get in touch with Frode at info@skanzaforum.com and let him know that you're on his side and that certain things can be done.
Yeah, I think that there's sort of a misunderstanding, or it's not a misunderstanding, but it's a weird attitude, and that is about Jewish influence. Jews have influence, but what do you do with that fact? Well, what I do with the fact of Jewish influence is I want to look at how they work, and I want to learn from that. And what Jews have been very good at, what they've been skilled at, is that they have not been pushovers. They have been pushy. We are pushovers, so that when our rights are violated, we try to be magnanimous about it, and we try to be stoic about it, and you know, we try to not be angry about it. But what they do when something goes against their interests and when their rights are violated is they freak out completely, and that is why they are influential beyond their numbers, because when something goes against their interests and rights, they will send hundreds of well-written but still angry letters voicing their opinions. They will take action. They will take legal action. They will organize and put pressure on the people who are violating their rights, and put pressure on the people in power and so on. That is the root of their influence. We need to do the same thing. We need to start writing those letters. We need to start being pushy, and we need to start sort of asserting ourselves and not being overly polite about these things. We are too polite. That's why we're winning. That's why we're losing. We need to stop being too polite.
Yeah, yeah.
We need to demand answers, and we need to be, you know, people need to become uncomfortable with violating our rights. We need to stop being pushovers about these things.
Yeah, we should want the bullies to pass us by.
Yeah.
Rather than focus on us. We want to be the kinds of people they don't want to mess with, because there's too much blowback, there's too much trouble.
Yeah,
we should not be easy targets. And no. I think that if we work beginning today at not being such easy targets, at not being so polite, at not being pushovers, I think we will be tremendously grateful, you know, down the road for taking those steps today.
Yeah,
just to make it more costly for us to be attacked like this.
Because there is a place for being angry and for being aggressive within the confines of the law. There is a place for being aggressive. We need to push and we need to attack within the confines of the law.
Right. So are there any further thoughts on this? Do you want to wrap up here?
Yeah, I think we can wrap up. We're only 2 weeks away from our next Skanza Forum in Oslo on November 2nd. I'm very much looking forward to that. I think Oslo is a different situation than Denmark. I don't want anyone to worry about the same thing happening there. Of course, we have a completely different set of speakers. It's a completely different kind of event in a completely different place. So I do think people need to take that in consideration if they are sort of worrying about what happened. And also, of course, the whole purpose of them doing this is they want to silence us. And
they want to discourage us from doing future events. So yeah, one of the ways that we let them win is by being discouraged.
Yeah.
And I have to say that having this attack on us this weekend, at the same time as I got news of losing yet another payment processor, it's demoralizing. You know, every day you wake up, it's like, oh, what next? What new thing are they going to throw our way? So, yeah, we can't let them win. And one of the ways that they win is by intimidating us and by demoralizing us. So be of good cheer. Mm. And get up and continue fighting, and maybe make this an occasion to dope yourself up with a bout of righteous anger. You know, there are ways that we can hit back at them, and I think that especially our Danish listeners, this is your country, your jurisdiction, your government has been at fault here. You can do something about this, and you need to get angry about it, and you need to take action. I have always been a believer in the politics of anger and resentment, because our resentment is righteous. Our anger is righteous. We are justified in trying to take action here. So again, please reach out to us if there's something that you can do, if you want to help Skanza Forum especially, in trying to push back against this. If you can help us get more news coverage of this, that would be extremely helpful as well.
Yeah, and I have to emphasize again that no one there, both the people who got into the venue and those who didn't get into the venue, not a single person has complained. And everyone I talked to was more motivated than ever by this.
That's good. We don't want people to, as we say, black pill about this.
No.
I don't regret anything. I feel sad that the things didn't go as planned, but I made the best of the situation and I got something out of it. Mm-hmm. And I think that most of us are quite constructive that way as well. Yes. So let's wrap up here, and we will be back again in one more week for another episode of Countercurrents Radio.